Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. We'll have a fun show on tap today. Lou Prado is going to join us, the great Penn State historian. Randy Sidler is going to join us, the 1977 All-American who, in that particular year, there was no defensive tackle in the country that played better than Randy Sidler did. And Greg Garrity Sr. is going to join us on the show. Or is it Smear or Greg Garrity today?
We have got Smear today.
Smear today.
And Garrity tomorrow.
Garrity. So Smear is going to be on, and how, because of his foresight, he was able to get Jack Ham paired with me down the road in life. How about that?
Now we know the rest of the story. Well, we will in about an hour and a half.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll find out from Smear about that. Yeah. But great guys on the show today, and we're looking forward to it very much. Welcome aboard to all of you. Did you see, let's get to Uniform Watch, the Nike, what are they called? You know, the ones that like jump through the screen at you?
Color Rush.
Uniforms.
The color rush. Yeah,
the
for the Thursday night games. Yeah. But I hear that there's some game. There's going to be some teams, though, that aren't wearing them, but still, right, you'll still be able to buy them.
Because some fans are colorblind. So because of that, Color Rush uniforms mean nothing to them. The ACC has decided to move its championship game out of North Carolina. They are the latest to do so due to North Carolina House Bill 2. And this is the one where it is perceived to limit the legal protection of the LGBT community. The NBA All-Star Game has already been moved out. And the ACC championship game has moved out, and some NCAA championships have moved out. So this is the latest in that move. What's interesting about this is that, first of all, an entity can elect to do whatever they wish with their business. But who are they hurting when they do this? This is not exactly a bill that was put on the referendum, a public referendum, and voted by the public. Thus, they made their choice. This was a legislative vote and signed by the governor. Now, of course, they represent, quote, the people. But in the end, who's going to be hurt by this? The people who run the businesses and so forth in the state. They're the ones that are going to be hurt by this. So I think the idea is they're trying to get now the people to rise up and see if they can get this changed. Now, I don't know. Look, we're not down in North Carolina. I don't know what the resolve is of the legislature about this versus, you know, the entities in sports. And you have pro teams that are already there, the Charlotte Hornets, the Carolina Panthers. And, of course, you have major football and basketball in there, Duke, Wake Forest, North Carolina, North Carolina State, East Carolina. You have all of those entities that are already there in state. And I know the coaches in those states have spoken out against it, including Mike Krzyzewski. Mike Krzyzewski doesn't really speak out about many issues, but he did about this one. But that's what they decided to do. Now, Orlando may be a landing spot for the ACC championship game. And they're still trying to inquire, because it's not as if the Citrus Bowl is always wide open, because they do have high school football playoff games at that time of the year that would be played. So now they have to decide, I mean, it appears that Orlando's the first option. Now we'll find out whether or not it goes there or not, but it's not going to be in Charlotte. What's going to happen, for example, with, let's say, the Belk Bowl? Will the Belk Bowl continue to be played? That's played in Charlotte as well. And the NCAA doesn't want to put any tournament games in there at either Greensboro or in Raleigh or Charlotte. So these are all interesting questions as to, and I don't know what the answers are, but sports entities are making their stand about this. And there's been no reaction, it seems, that I know of, from the North Carolina governor or from the legislature. Again, this is not a state referendum. This was not on the ballot where the people of the state voted for it. It's the legislature and the governor that decided to enact the law. Now, some of you out there might agree with the law. Some of you might out there might not agree with the law. I don't know. I'm just trying to give you the factual basis as to what's going on there. And we'll allow Lawrence and the gang in the morning to have an argument about it. They have arguments, right?
Last I checked.
I've heard that.
Sure.
I've heard that they have arguments.
Me too.
3:35 and 4:35 every day. I hear they have arguments. Oh. Penn State Temple is Saturday at Beaver Stadium. Both teams are 1-1. I have no read on Temple at all. None. Now, obviously, I know all about Philip Walker. Of course I do. And Jahad Thomas and Armstead and Colin Thompson, the tight end. Latrell Bryant on the outside. I mean, all the white, Roland Deloach and so forth. Because they played last year, and some of the offensive linemen, those guys played last year, so you know about them. Defensively, no Ioannidis, no Manikavich, but Sean Chandler's back, and Sean Chandler's really good. Praise Martin Aguike. Same story with him. Know a lot about him. But anyway, do you realize in the last 14 games that Praise Martin Aguike is tied for the national lead in most fumbles forced with 8. And, of course, we know in the first two games that there has been an issue with that. And Penn State absolutely needs to clean it up against a guy off the edge who's really good at stripping and getting to the football. So that's an issue in a game like this. You got to be, you know, your ball security has to be, you can't do anything unless you possess the dang thing. And you can't keep giving up either touchdowns or short drives. I mean, Pitt scored 42 points, but half the points, 21 of the 42 points, were scored on drives of 30 yards or less. All touchdowns. Touchdown drives of 30 yards or less, 3 of them. Now, one was after a kickoff return, the other 2 were after fumbles. So that's got to be cleaned up. And this is a team in Temple that a year ago, Phil Snow was an excellent defensive coordinator. A year ago, they were getting turnovers by the bucket loads, and they scored, I believe, 119 points off of takeaways last year. Some number. Maybe it was 112. I think it was 112 points off of takeaways last year. That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. If you get over 100 points off of takeaways in a year, you are going to have an incredibly successful year. Now, they're not quite off to that same pace and that same start this year. But that was one of the keys for them last year, the number of takeaways that they got and the number of points they got off it. And Penn State needs to keep that to an absolute minimum. They can't turn the ball over more than twice in this game. Can't. They have to keep the turnovers under two, in my opinion, for the, put themselves in a position to win. Now, conversely, Penn State's been better at takeaways in the first two games than they were last year. They've absolutely been better. You look at Saturday's game. Golden got an interception. Reed got the fumble recovery. All right. You know, that's better. That, you know, first of all, you get a safety. Getting a pick. Penn State only had one interception by a safety last year. That was Golden's interception at the end of the Maryland game. And they got the fumble recovery. But you're going to have to win giveaway takeaway in a game like this. You have to. And the other part, too, is, look, there's more parity in this thing now than ever before. I know the top, you have Ohio State playing Oklahoma this weekend. It's like, oh, yeah, two great teams going head-to-head. You got Alabama, Ole Miss, so forth. But there are more teams today that are good. You know, why does Georgia go out and play Nickel State and win by two? When they're, what, a 55-point favorite? 55 points. Take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Four city blocks of new Fords.
Over 40,000 new trucks sold.
There's only one place.
One place
you want to be in September for your new Ford.
It's Sunbury Motors Ford.
During the annual September new truck sale, choose from over 100 trucks with savings over 13 grand. And new F-150s starting as low as $23,929. SMC has the right trucks in stock to handle all your towing jobs and get the best fuel economy. The F-150 has been America's number one selling truck for 39 consecutive years.
One is sold every 41 seconds.
Sunbury Motors has over 50 of the all-new 2017 Ford Escapes, priced as low as $29.80. Take up to $5,000 off 2017 Ford Explorers, starting under $30,000. And there's 0% financing for up to 72 months on all 2016 Fords,
including the F-150.
SMC is where you want to be for the annual September truck sale at Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza. SMC, 100 years and going strong.
The Steve Jones Show, honoring the 50th anniversary of Joe Paterno's first game as Penn State head coach on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Lou Prado, then Randy Sidler, and finally Steve Smear. I owe a debt of gratitude to Steve Smear. He got me. He opened the door for Jack to get to Penn State, and I wouldn't be working with him today, I don't think, if he hadn't done that. Now, I might phrase that differently when Steve comes on, just as a joke, but no. You know what's amazing about those guys? All these guys stay in touch, you know. Jack, and Smear text all the time. You know, Steve Prue. All these guys stay in touch. They to this day. Now, Mike Reed's going to be coming into town. And one of the great pianists of all time is Manny Axe. Right? And I can't remember the circumstances, but Manny Axe was over Jack's house. So Jack's talking to him. And he's asking about all these things about the piano, and Jack says, okay, you know, I'm doing my best here. I'm a little bit out of my element. And then Manny Axe starts asking Jack about, you know, football, linebacker, and, you know. So they're all trying to draw from each other. So Mike Reed finds out about this, and he says, for God's sakes, how could a guy like you possibly sit down and have a conversation with him? At your house? How did you get him to your house? And what happened was that Manny Axe was playing with the Pittsburgh Symphony that night. And Jack and Joanne do go to the symphony. There were moments where he said to me, he says, you want to go? No, you don't look like a symphony guy. I've gone to the symphony before, okay? Is that Manny?
It is.
Now, whoever thought on a show like this, the Maniacs would make the cut.
When I woke up this morning, I did not expect to hear Maniacs.
I mean, is this a show that reaches all masses? From the sophisticated to the common guy.
In no way did I expect to hear a little Chopin, a little mazurka in C-sharp minor.
And I could tell it was C-sharp minor.
I knew you could.
Especially
without hesitation.
Especially after you said it.
Not much of a read on Temple this week, but C-sharp minor, come on. You're there.
All over it. Got it.
Like pepperoni on a pizza.
And Mike Reed says to me, so how could you possibly have a conversation with a guy like that? He says, no, no, they went really well. They, it's a well-rounded show. This is not, you know. This isn't a couple grunts in a bar talking sports here. Wait till I tell Hammer this one. Yeah, we actually played Maniacs on the air. He will laugh. And then he will have doubts.
Then you send him a link to the podcast.
Well, no. Well, what happened is this. He'll say to me, he says, how could somebody like you possibly have pulled that off? He says, that's way out of your wheelhouse. I said, you got that right. But is Lawrence playing Chopin in the morning?
No. Not this week.
No.
He's at the beach.
All right. How about Reichle?
No.
No shot.
No.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You think Dan Patrick does this? No. Maniacs. I'm going to have to ask Mike about that tomorrow. You know that. I have to. Right, he's on tomorrow, right?
4:35 tomorrow. Still in Nashville now as we speak. He was going to be doing some writing and recording today and then making his way back up to PA.
I mean, does this show cover one? I mean, did you ever expect that you would hear Chopin in some C-sharp minor or whatever on the air with the great pianist Maniacs? You are shocked, aren't you, Sean?
Sometimes the squirrel gets the nut.
I'm sorry. I mean, the suit. I mean, the only way he ever listens to the piano is if Mario Andretti can play it. And it's usually chopsticks. All right. Lou Prado coming up next half hour. It'll be a lot of fun. Look forward to it. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Back with Sir Lou Prado. Next half hour, News Radio 1070 WKOK, your unofficial home for Maniacs.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. Time now for this day in sports history. 1916. Christy Mathewson won his 373rd and final game of his career, but he did it for the Cincinnati Reds. It was the only victory in his career outside of the New York Giants. 1959, Aqueduct Racetrack opened At a cost of $32 million, 1968, Denny McClain became baseball's first 30-game winner in 34 years. I remember, I think it was Gates Brown had a sacrifice fly to knock in the winning run in the ninth inning to win it. 1990, Ken Griffey Sr. and Ken Griffey Jr. hit back-to-back home runs off Angels starter Kirk McCaskill. The Angels still won the game 7-5, and it was in 1994 that it was announced that the season in Major League Baseball would be ending. After a 34th day of the player strike, the owners voted 26-2 in favor of ending the season. There was no World Series for the first time since 1904. It did irreparable damage, this move on this date. Yes, they've come back, but they have never come all the way back. All right, speaking of history, not only is he the great Penn State sports historian, the great football historian, I'm also very proud to call him a very good friend. Lou Prado joins us on the show. Lou, welcome. It is our pleasure, our privilege to have you back.
Thanks, Steve, and nice talking to you. Just saw you a few minutes ago, or hours ago, I guess, at the quarterback club, so it's good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good to talk with you. So let's get to it here. And this is obviously the 50th anniversary of Joe's first game as the head coach. He had an offer from Yale in 64, and that's when he went to the administration to find out where he stood for the Penn State job down the road.
Yeah, and you know, he was an ambitious guy, and he always wanted to get back to the Ivy League because that's where, you know, he went to school, and the Ivy League was pretty tough back then. You know, it was, you know, it's a different time, different element now. And basically was told by Ernie McCoy and he asked if they're going to get the job at Penn State, and was told by Ernie McCoy and Eric Walker, if he's good enough, he'll get the job. I mean, so, and when, you know, then when it came in 66, when Rip decided to retire at 65, Joe was the heir apparent. I mean, I was covering Penn State, so to speak, for freelancing at the time, and just moving to Pittsburgh in 66. And Tom Bender made the, I don't know if you've been over this with your audience, but it was, Tom Bender was the play-by-play guy preceding you many, many years ago. And Tom worked for the Pittsburgh radio and TV station, KDKA. And he broke the story on a Thursday in February. And he must have been fed the story somehow. You know, leaks are a lot different. The culture was a lot different. But when he broke the story, then they quickly called a news conference for that Saturday, February 19th, I think was the date, February 18th or 19th, and announced that Joe was the head coach. But there was no doubt that Joe was going to be the heir apparent because, you know, I met Joe in 1955 when I went to school, and, you know, and covered for the Collegian and throughout the 60s, covered Penn State for freelance in different ways and for the AP and Pittsburgh, eventually for Pittsburgh TV station. And you know, he was calling a lot of the plays back then. I mean, you know, you know his history, but it's just amazing what, whoever thought that 50 years later, you know, he would have been at 409 games. I mean, I don't think anybody was going to coach 50. Rip Pringle once told him, you know, coach, get out of coaching before, I think he said 55 or something like that, or 50 or 55, which was, you know, which was maybe the age back then.
Right. And then he has that first game against Lou Saban, of all people, and Maryland. Lou Saban had been the head coach of the AFL champion Buffalo Bills in 64-65. Maryland threw a pile of money at him. That was his first game at Maryland, and Penn State won the game 15-7, Lou.
Well, I was at, you know, my memory is bad. I don't remember the game, but I'm pretty sure I was at the game because Tom Bender asked me to be his spotter. So I was working out of Pittsburgh TV station. I went to Pittsburgh TV station in August, and Tom asked to be a spotter. You know, which you have you have one of the great ones now from out of Pittsburgh being your spotter, and Tom asked me. So I was at the game, but I've really studied this game a lot, and can tell you that after the game, Saban didn't shake hands, and he went off the field, and Joe wondered what happened, and Saban called him up on that Monday and said, Joe, I didn't apologize for not calling you, but both teams were lousy. And Joe eventually said, yeah, it was one of the worst coach games of all time. But actually, I've looked at the video of it. I looked at the game film a few years ago to do a research about Mike Reed, who was credited with three safeties, but he really didn't get the three safeties. That's a whole other story. But what's interesting, the game, it was a typical game with mistakes, mistake prone. I mean, Penn State led off the, started off. Had two big penalties in the first few minutes of the game that could have broken the game wide open. But eventually, it came down to the three safeties that eventually scored and made it 15-7. But and the ironic thing is, Saban finished with a 4-6 season and went back to the pros after that season.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, exactly right. And you're calling Ron Moeller our spotter?
Well, he, I've been in your booth, and he functions for the spotter. But you're so good at knowing what's going on, except when I'm up there saying, "No, you know, the other guy's already in the game." I'm teasing you now, Steve. I sat beside Tom. Didn't have the expertise that you had, and I picked out the blockers. You know, I had some experience for the Collegian doing some of this stuff back when I was in Penn State doing some CBS broadcast, helping out the networks back then. So I liked it, and I liked spotting. And it was funny though, coming back to the Joe situation is, how things have changed from that first atmosphere back there. And I mean, you had to get Joe. You could get the coaches coming off after the game and talking to you. You had to go down to the locker room. I mean, I spent the 67, 68, 69 season covering Penn State for Channel 11 in Pittsburgh as a extra job. I was really a news producer. And you had to go get him on the field, you know, like you used to interview him on the field when you were breaking in right. As the third man on the team. But we had to do that. It was in film days, and we'd had to send the film back to Pittsburgh. So the stuff we were using wouldn't get on the air until, you know, Sunday. So it's a lot different today than having the media room and all the people that are in there and asking the question. Are very formal. I mean, you go into the locker room and talk to the players. I did this throughout the 60s, even doing print interviews, and sometimes get players ticked off with me. I mean, it was a great experience as I look back upon it. And Joe was always cordial and always friendly with the media back then. He really was.
And, you know, I think if he had to pick out a couple of wins early in his career that were important, one, of course, was the NC State win. They were nationally ranked. I think they were third. But he always felt in his lifetime that game at Miami, he was a 5-6 head coach at the time in the second year. And that Friday night in the Orange Bowl was when he made some dramatic moves.
Well, the team, that was the turnaround game. The North Carolina State game put him on the national map. Because of the goal line stand and the celebration of the North Carolina State game is in a museum. There's a big mural of the fans celebrating around the goalposts. But the Miami game was the key. But he had started to do that early in the season. They got upset by Navy starting the 67 season, and he started putting sophomores in there. But he really put a lot of the sophomores in on the Miami game. It was very hot down there. It was raining down in Miami on a night game, that's what I think is when Smear went in, and I can't remember some of the other guys, when Jim Cates maybe, linebacker.
Neil Smith got in.
Right. I mean, a lot of guys that became the stars. What's unusual about the game is Mike Reed didn't play in that game. Mike Reed played in the 66 game, but then he got hurt, and I think it was from the wrestling in 67. He redshirted. That made him, you know, he got the medical redshirt, you may say, so that made him, he played in 68 and 69. But that team then just turned around, and they didn't, you know, they went, it started the undefeated streak. They tied that Florida State in the bowl game, which also put Joe on the map. But the 67 is interesting with North Carolina State because Earl Edwards was the head coach of North Carolina State, and he should have got the job when Bob Higgins retired. Earl Edwards is a Penn Stater. He's one of the good players from the 30s, longtime assistant coach. And when they gave the job to Joe Bedink, he went to Michigan State, and then took Al Michaels went to Michigan State, who also was a Penn State guy, played quarterback for Penn State in the 30s, and then they went down to North Carolina State, and they took the Penn State quarterback from 40 named Bill Schmaltz, and so it was a Penn State staff, and they had a lot of Pennsylvanians in it. So the game that was the game that put Denny Goncott started making him an All-American, because he would attend a class in the morning and then come out, play football. He was taking one of those, you know, very serious classes. classes that not college, not communications like you or journalists like you and me. He was taking those very serious. I can't even remember which course it was,
Can't remember because of what we graduated in.
But he ran back punts, intercepted the pass, and during the goal line stand, he got a lot of credit for the goal line stand when they stopped the North Carolina State great back, and I can't remember his name right now. But I went back and did research on it and found out that Mike Mabath was the guy that made the initial tackle. Yeah. Mike went on to play with the pros. He's an insurance guy or a investment banker down in
Orlando,
and very involved with the Players Association, and a very outgoing guy. And he always said, "He said I helped make that stop. I helped make a stop." Well, none of the pictures showed it, and I found a photo that showed it that he should have gotten as much credit as Oncutt. So, a lot of these stories is what I get involved in and love to do when I reminisce about this stuff.
Well, there's something else too that's an important element is that Joe wanted to make it a college experience where you played great football and you also got your degree. We've had one former player after another talk about the importance of that. How important was it that Penn State and Joe, won games to then make sure that everyone understood that there was a double standard?
Well, if they hadn't won the games, the great experiment would have been a failure. But Oncutt was the poster child, to use the cliche, for that. He was the first, but Charlie Pittman followed. And you go on and add the name of the guy. Even Mike Reed, even though he was recruited before Joe became the head coach. But he really believed in that, and it went back to his his days at in Brooklyn Prep as well, and the Jesuits priests, and then Brown. And I guess one thing I found amazing over the years, Steve, is I didn't know a lot of these guys later after I left the Pittsburgh area in 1970 and became a Michigan fan, but partly until Penn State went into the Big Ten. I didn't get to cover many games. Only covered some bowl games. But what I found interesting most is that as I got to know these guys later, and when I started writing books and working for the museum, a lot of them left here not liking Joe. They thought as you know how much they love, most of the guys love him, and it was like a father figure. He was, he had his own ways, and they rebelled against him, but then they realized as they were growing up and going out into the real world and succeeding as business people that he was really trying to help them, and he did help them, and that's why I think they're all, as many as possible, are coming back to honor him in this Letterman's event on Friday, I could just go name players. Walk-ons and you could too, and all Americans who feel the same way, and it's not a myth. Penn State brags about its academics, and I could go back into history when Penn State was not doing this. It started with Rip Engel, and Ernie McCoy had a lot to do with it, but Joe made it public and had the winning teams to do it, and great teams. The 68, 69 teams were two of the best in the country, and they only finished second in the national title race because no one believed Penn State could be that good.
Right. What's your thoughts on this weekend? It's the 50th anniversary, which, we look back, when you have one coach for 46 seasons, that's remarkable in itself. What are your thoughts, though, on this weekend?
Well, you mean about the celebration, or you mean about the game?
I think obviously we're talking about Joe here, so.
I'm surprised that they're doing anything, frankly. I don't know what they're doing, and I hope it works out, because every time they bring up the issue, we get hammered nationally by the media and by the social media. The internet is just filled with it. The hate comes out. Most people are ignorant about what really happened here. The pit. I saw a couple signs of Pitt Joe knew, but they didn't get as nasty. And we have a Michigan guy up there that'll start trying to raise money for a charity, supposedly to have silent treatment of Penn State when they're up there. There's so much ignorance about there, and Penn State's caught between the old proverbial rock in a hard place, and I understand that. So whatever they do this weekend, if it's not, you know, a complete, let's say, admission that everything was wrong, the Freed report was wrong, that we know, and we were wrong on what we did, da-da-da-da-da, if they don't do that, what are they going to do? They're going to say they're going to make people mad no matter what they do, and no matter what they do, until the truth does come out, until the evidence is shown that the Free report was a fraud. And as I said, I keep repeating myself sometime, but there's so much involved here. It's a tough situation, and we're going to be criticized for it. That's the nature of the beast these days.
Lou, always a pleasure. Appreciate your time very much, my friend.
Thanks, Steve, and I'll be listening to you and Jack and Ron on Saturday.
Well, maybe we'll have to have Ron get a speaking role.
Take care.
Thanks, Lou. Lou Prado. Now we're up to the point where Mueller gets a speaking role. Wait till I tell him. Well, he's probably listening anyway. Wait till I tell him this one. All right, we'll come back. Randy Sidler next half hour, and Steve Smear final half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
The Steve Jones Show, honoring the 50th anniversary of Joe Paterno's first game as Penn State head coach on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Probably not a better defensive tackle in the country in 1977 than Randy Sidler. We will talk with him in the next half hour. Steve Smear in the final half hour about how he changed the course of Jack Ham's life and Penn State's as well, because he said, I got this guy I know, I think they can play. I'll never forget what Joe told me about Jack, the player. That Jack comes in as a freshman, and Joe says after the first week of practice, and I can't remember which assistant coach he said this to, but he said, all right, how did everybody miss on this guy? Like, this guy can really play. Now, Jack could not play his freshman year. Freshmen were ineligible. But then, in the spring of 1968, Joe not only put Jack out there, he actually put him in this first unit at starting linebacker. And Jack's always told me that of all the things that happened to him in football, that gave him so much confidence that he thought he could play. That he thought he could play the game when that move happened. Again, and we'll talk to Steve Smear a little bit about that, but also about the early days in the 60s and playing on that defense. And Mike Reed's going to be on tomorrow. Greg Garrity's going to be on tomorrow. We got a lot going on the show. Harry Donahue, by the way, play-by-play voice Temple football Friday. At some point, we do have to talk about the game. Just me, silly me. So we'll get Harry Donahue. Oh, and the it's interesting, big weekend here. It's a big game for Penn State for this group. You can't allow Pitt to beat you twice. Now, I didn't sense that on the practice field last night at all. I sensed they were going about their business the way they usually do, and they're pretty locked in, which was good. Sometimes getting back to work on a Tuesday and taking that Monday off, sometimes that clears the head.